Like I have on the screen, we will follow up, or we will enter our discussion today in Acts chapter 25. We're going to look at Paul's defense before Governor Festus. We're going to see in this particular chapter that Festus rejects the Jewish leaders' requests to bring Paul back to Jerusalem. They had ulterior motives in mind. And I don't know if Festus knew of the plot or the oath that 40 people took from the council to the Jewish leaders, to the Sanhedrin, or whether or not he was using his authority to keep the trial in Caesarea, we don't know. Luke doesn't share that with us. We're also going to hear Paul's defense, again, another speech that he's going to share about his beliefs. We also are going to cover the meeting with Festus's meeting with King Agrippa and his sister Bernice. And also we are going to see how Festus presents Paul to Agrippa and the assembly. We're going to notice just briefly on the trials that Paul had undergone for his faith. We see that it started in Acts chapter 22, where Paul defended himself before the Jews that were rioting. Then again, we see in Acts 22 to Acts 23, verse 10, Paul's defense before the Sanhedrin, the council. Again, this is the second time that Paul had to speak about his conversion, and we went into detail with that. Last week we looked at Acts 24, where we had Paul's defense speech before Governor Felix. And today we are going to look at Paul's defense before Governor Festus. And we're going to see next week Paul's defense before King Agrippa. And finally, Paul's defense in Rome. Paul undergone 6 trials for his faith. And when you look at each one of those trials, he was consistent. He told the truth. He was faithful to the Lord at whatever it was going to cost him. We also see that the commander of Claudius Lystras, he recognized that Paul was innocent. Also Felix, Governor Felix, knew in his heart that he was innocent. And today we're going to see that Festus couldn't find anything wrong with what Paul had done. And it's in his opinion, it was a matter of a religious disagreement among the Jewish community. Next week we're going to see, and I pulled one question in from next week, into this particular lesson because it's meaningful. King Agrippa found this person, Paul, innocent. And during his defense speech to Festus, Paul's going to demand an appeal to Caesar, which cannot be changed. It helped Festus because he didn't have to rule against Paul. Let the emperor do it. And that emperor at the time was Nero. What was Nero doing to Christians? Killing them. Exactly. So Paul is putting his faith in a Gentile. But yet, let's remember Jesus' words to him in Acts chapter 23, verse 11. Take courage. You have been my witness in Jerusalem. And we have seen it. And also you will be my witness in Rome. And we're going to see that in the remainder of the book of Acts after his voyage to Rome. We're going to see the difficulties that he had. But yet he was still faithful to the Lord. He didn't deviate from that. That's a lesson for you and I when we go through our lives. Remain faithful at all costs. So Festus is introduced in the last part of chapter 24 as the new governor. And, you know, he wanted to keep relations high with the Jewish community. So we read in the first three verses, why did the chief priest and the leading men of the Jews request from Festus that Paul be brought to Jerusalem? And who would like to look at those first three verses or read those first three verses?
Festus, then, having arrived in the province, 3 days later went up to Jerusalem, Caesarea, and the chief priests and the leading men of the Jews brought charges against Paul, and they were urging him, requesting a concession against Paul, that he might have him brought to Jerusalem at the same time, setting an ambush to kill him on the way.
Thank you. So what was their intent? To kill him. They wanted to do away with Paul. They couldn't come up with any proof on what he had done. All they said, well, look, he's a guy who caused trouble. He's a pest. He's stirring up people throughout the world. And we have seen that these Jewish false teachers were constantly following Paul and trying to undermine his ministry. Now Festus, who's taken over for Felix, and you know, when you think about it, it was a change in the government. And what happened with this change? Well, these Jews didn't like what Felix was doing. So they went over his head, complained. Now, the hierarchy of the Roman Empire decided, well, look, let's change the governor. So they sent this guy in, Festus. And we see that Festus wanted to do a good job. So when he was there for about 3 days, he went up to Jerusalem to talk to these Jewish leaders, talk to the Sanhedrin, talk to the council, and try to build a relationship with them. And they requested from him that Paul be brought back to Jerusalem for trial. And he had second thoughts about that. And what was Festus's response to the Jews? And can I get someone to read verses 4 and 5? That's right, you got it. Yes, he gave them a opportunity to come down to Caesarea from Jerusalem and again have another trial. Ted.
I can't imagine that the road has not called Caesarea. That's the sort of higher. The reason you brought him is that there was a plan to kill
him. Mm-hmm.
And so they already knew about that. And Festus is a fool. He probably was like, oh, you're
yeah, exactly. He must have heard what happened, how they delivered Paul from Jerusalem to Caesarea, and all those soldiers that accompanied Paul. And they were concerned about his safety. And don't forget, we had read so far that Paul had claimed he was a citizen of Tarsus. And now he's going to use in this particular defense that he's also a Roman citizen. Or we read that last week. And the commander said, well, look, how did you get your citizenship? Well, I didn't buy it. I was born into it. Where the commander had to buy his citizenship. So he was a natural citizen of the Roman Empire. So he had dual citizenship. But when you look at Paul's life, we see that he was straightforward. He was truthful. And he always put God first. Lessons that we could apply to our lives. See, Festus was willing to put Paul back on trial and try to resolve this particular dilemma between the Jews, the hierarchy, the Sanhedrin, the leading men of the Jews, and Paul. So we see in verses 6 and 7, and after he spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea. So he stayed in Jerusalem for 8 to 10 days. And on the next day, he took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. And after Paul arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many serious charges against him, which they could not prove. Again, we go back to the first time those Jews were yelling and screaming and trying to riot. And the time when the Sanhedrin were bringing charges, when they brought formal charges against them to Governor Felix. The only thing that Paul was guilty of, he confessed that Jesus Christ is alive. He confessed that there was a resurrection. And when you go back to those men who were trying to kill him, who took an oath, we see that they didn't invite the Pharisees along. And why is that? They were the Sanhedrin, the consul, the high priest, the elders, and the Sadducees. Go ahead, Dean.
Remember, the Pharisees wouldn't have anything to do with the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
The Sadducees were more than happy to deal with the Romans. They're the political party. So it's not surprising that the Sadducees are the ones who press the case against Paul when he's appearing before the Roman authorities. The Pharisees would not go there for any reason. Now, you get the strange bedfellows because it's the Pharisees who agree with Paul's argument about the resurrection. The Sadducees don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just you get the melding of the whole political backdrop, and Festus doesn't want to go to Jerusalem. He hates Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, as far as he's concerned, it's a backwater town. I'm going to stay up here in Caesarea in the nice town. And he wants to keep Paul up in Caesarea just because he doesn't like Jerusalem. That, you know, that's a bunch of rabble rousers. That's their capital. They can do what they want. But my capital is in Caesarea. So you got the religious and the political, and it's all getting tied together here.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, he was concerned about his position, because just what they did to Felix, they may do the same thing to him. And he wanted to be fair to everyone, even to Paul. And we're going to see, as we dive into the remainder of this chapter, that he couldn't find anything wrong with these charges against Paul. They were just trumped up charges. So how did Paul respond to the Jews' false charges against him? Who would like to read verse number 8?
While Paul said in his own defense, I have committed no offense either against the law of the Jews or against the
Lord. So, paraphrase that for us, Faye.
He did all bases. The Jews have been. He has done it.
Mm-hmm. You look at, he didn't do anything against the law, and that's the Mosaic law. He didn't do anything to desecrate the temple. When you remember that James told him, hey, go with these four other guys, pay for their services as a Nazirite vow, and join them. And Paul didn't. So he didn't desecrate the temple. They accused him of bringing in Trophimus from Ephesus into the temple just because he was hanging around with him in Jerusalem. But Paul said, I didn't do any such thing. And finally, he says, as Faye had shared with us, he didn't do anything against the Roman Empire. The only thing that he was charged with is preaching Jesus. We are fortunate today that we don't run into those things in this country. Someday we might. So we have to be on our guard and be just like Paul. Stand firm in the truth. Don't deviate from that. Make sure you do what's right in the sight of the Lord. And of course, live according to the laws of the land. We see in verses 9 and 10, but Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me on these charges? But Paul said, I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also well know. So in order to placate those Jews in Jerusalem, he requests of Paul, would you go to Jerusalem and stand before me in the trial? And Paul responds, look, I'm here today before your judgment. This is where I should be tried. And he knows he's innocent. Festus knows he's innocent. And the Jews, with all their trumped up charges, cannot prove what was going on. So every follower of Jesus is a target of false accusations by the accuser of the brethren. And John talks about the accuser of the brethren in the book of Revelations, chapter 12, and verse 10. Then I hear a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down. He who accuses them before our God day and night. So Satan is working to destroy Christianity. And Jesus is going to take care of that. Ted?
And it's amazing the parallel between Paul's trial here and Jesus' trial.
Absolutely.
That, when Paul was converted, Jesus told him how much he was going to have to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that you didn't let it know that you're coming from this. You're going to stand before Christ. That's not going to happen.
And, you know, you could just imagine what's going on in Paul's mind. He said, the Savior came to me and told me. I'm going to listen to him. We have the Bible as our guide, and we should be listening to God's guidance for us in all life. And we see that Jesus is our defense against condemnation and false accusations. And Paul says that in the 8th chapter of Romans, verses 33 and 34. Who will bring a charge against God's elect? God is the one who justifies. Who is the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is he who died, yes. Rather was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who also intercedes for us. And just remember Jesus' words to Paul in the 23rd chapter of Acts in verse 11. Take courage. You witness before men in Jerusalem about me, and also you will be a witness in Rome. So Jesus is with him. We have to rely on him. So why did Paul appeal to Caesar? And who would like to read verses 11 and 12, please?
If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything worthy of death, I do not refuse to die. But if none of those things is true of which these men accuse me, no one can hand me over to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then when Festus had conferred with his council, he answered, you have appealed to Caesar, and to Caesar you will go.
So he appealed to Caesar, and he's using his right as a Roman citizen. And this must relieve Festus from being a judge over Paul's trial, because he knows he's innocent, and if he frees him, the Jews are going to complain. And if he doesn't free him, the Jews are going to complain anyway. Ted, and then Carol.
We've already looked at chapter 23 and verse 11. We know why Paul feels
Exactly. And Carol?
I was just going to say, Paul knows that there's no way he's going to Jerusalem and Festus is going to say, oh, well, this guy gets to go free. I mean, once you've gone there, you know, the charge is going to be confirmed.
In fact, Paul is going to get a free ticket to go to Rome. When you think about it, but yet he's going to go in chains. So we see that it was the right of a Roman citizen, which Paul was, to appeal his case before Caesar. And if the charge involved a capital offense, and once the appeal was made, nothing can stop it. We also see that the person was tried to be before Caesar himself. Could be that Nero would have had a good day and would have released him. We don't know. And the appeal shook Felix because he knew he had made a serious blunder. He should have tried the case. He should have freed Paul, but he didn't. And the things had gotten out of hand because the words, "I appeal to Caesar," were irrevocable. The words couldn't be reversed. Once Paul said that, he sealed his fate. He was going to stand before Caesar and argue again his defense. It's amazing to me when you look at how these Roman authorities, from the commander to Felix and also to Festus, how they knew in their hearts that Paul was innocent, but yet they didn't do anything. Felix, for 2 years, held him in prison in his palace, seeking a monetary gain from Paul. He knew he was collecting money for the needy saints in Jerusalem. He said, well, if Paul had access to these funds, well, maybe he could bribe me. He was greedy, and it showed. And now Festus is on board, and he wants to do the right thing. So he goes to Jerusalem, tries to appease the Jews, but yet he has his trial in Caesarea. In the 13th verse, we see now, when several days has elapsed, King Agrippa and Bernice arrive at Caesarea and pay their respects to Festus. I do have a out of sequence, so to speak, on my worksheet side of handout. This verse will be used later on. We'll see that as we look at the remaining of the chapter. Describe Paul's trial before Festus. Now, Luke, again, is going to share with us what happened. And who would like to read verses 14 through 18, please?
While they were spending many days there, Festus made Paul a case to the king, saying, "There's a man here who is up to the king." When I was in Jerusalem, the chief priests, the elders of the Jews, brought charges against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation against him. I answered them that it's not the custom of the Romans to hand over any man before the accused meets his accuser face to face and has an opportunity to make his defense against the charges. So after they had assembled here, I did not delay, but on the next day took my seat on the tribunal and ordered the man to be brought before me. The accuser stood up. They began bringing charges against him, not of such crimes as I was.
Thank you, Ron. So we see that in this particular scripture reading that Luke doesn't go into a lot of detail of this particular case. He just brings it up that the chief priests and the elders of the Jews brought charges against this man, and that was Paul. And he wanted him killed. And he answered, it's not custom of the Romans to hand over any man before he makes his defense. So Festus was trying to make sure he hears what Paul has to say. So how did Paul present the gospel during his trial before Festus? And what does Luke say about that in verses 19 through 21? And can I get a volunteer to read that?
But they simply had some points of disagreement about their own religion and about a dead man, Jesus, whom Paul asserted to be alive. Being at such a loss how to investigate his matters, I asked whether he was going to go to Jerusalem and there stand trial. But when Paul appealed to be held in custody for the effort of the city, I ordered him to be kept in custody until I send him to Caesar.
Thank you. So we see that Paul is still confessing Jesus. Jesus' resurrection. And we see that thread of the resurrection throughout his defense speeches, where he just introduces it. And he said before Felix, there's a resurrection of the just and the unjust. And now Jesus, whom Paul attested to be alive, Jesus is alive. He rose from the dead. In verse 22, and then Agrippa said to Festus, I also would like to hear this man myself. Tomorrow he said, you shall hear him. Agrippa had no authority to make a judgment, but he wanted to listen to what was happening. So who is King Agrippa and Bernice? What do we know about him? Go ahead, Eileen. I thought you were going to say something. I apologize. So Herod Agrippa II, he ruled a client kingdom of the Roman Empire to the northeast of Festus's province. Agrippa was known as an expert in Jewish customs and religious matters. Though he did not have jurisdiction over Paul in this case, his hearing of the matter would be helpful for Festus. King Agrippa's great-great-grandfather had tried to kill Jesus as a baby. If you remember what the Gospels say. His grandfather had John the Baptist beheaded. And his father had the Apostle James martyred. So this family is not an upright family. And Bernice was a Jewish client queen of the Roman Empire. And I'll explain what a client in a client government is in a minute. During the second half of the first century, Bernice was a member of the Herodian dynasty that ruled the Roman province of Judea between 30 BC and 92 BC. She was the daughter of King Agrippa I and Cypros, and the sister of King Agrippa II. After a number of failed marriages through the 40s, she spent most of the remainder of her life at the court of her brother, Herod Agrippa II, amidst rumors they were carrying on an incestuous relationship that came out of Josephus. And a client state is an international relations is a state that is economically, politically, and or militarily subordinate to a more powerful state, controlling state. That controlling state is Rome. We also see that the client state may have various, be described as a satellite state, associated state, dominion, condominium, self-governing, colonial, neo-colonial, protectorate, vassalant state, puppet state, and tribunal state. Again, this is out of my study from on the internet. But this is what I want to share with you. We see that, let me get a marker here. Here's the guy we're talking about, Herod Agrippa, and here's his sister that's with him. But they also had a second sister, and that was this person, Drusilla. And who is she? What do we know about Drusilla? Exactly. As Di said, she's the wife of Governor Felix. And we see here's his father, who had the apostles James martyred, and here's his grandfather. This is a hard one for me. Aristobus, so Bulus. He had John the Baptist beheaded. And if we go back up to here, Herod the Great, we see that he had all the babies under two killed because he was afraid that this Jesus was come and be the ruler. Little did he know that Jesus' kingdom is not of this world, but yet he focused on that. So why did King Agrippa come to Caesarea? And this is the verse I have sequence is verse 13. King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea to pay their respects to the new governor, Festus. So who was in attendance in the audience when King Agrippa wanted to examine Paul? And who would like to read verse 23, please?
So on the next day, when Agrippa came together with Bernice amid great pomp and entered the auditorium accompanied by the commanders, the prominent men of the city, at the command of Festus, Paul was brought in.
So who was there?
Important
people. And when you read Luke's account of what happened or what transpired here, they came in with pomp, with elaborate things on them, robes and stuff. They made it a procession, Agrippa and Bernice. And Festus calls Paul in chains before these individuals. Paul should have been the one who received the recognition, not these Gentiles. But yet they didn't do that. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all you gentlemen here present with us, you see this man about whom all the people of the Jews appealed to me, both at Jerusalem and here, loudly declaring that he ought not to live any longer. Dean.
Oh, I was just going to say, when you think about Agrippa coming in with all of the pomp and circumstance that would surround the king, he's doing that for the purpose of intimidating the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for the purpose of intimidating Paul, although I would suspect that he knew that Paul wasn't going to be intimidated by this. But this was his way of saying, I'm an important person, and you have to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny. He didn't have any real authority.
Exactly.
You see people doing the same thing today.
Mm-hmm.
I see people who want to present themselves as being somebody, and they're not. And this harks back to the thing that just shocks me about U.S. presidents. And it doesn't matter who they are. When they go to lay a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier, somebody else carries the wreath for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, I'm an important person. So I don't hold my own umbrella. Some lackey will come and hold my umbrella. I'm really impressed by the guy that I saw at one point. He is a government official, and it's raining. And there's this pregnant woman clearly she's about to pop. And she's standing in the rain. He takes his umbrella and he goes and holds it over her.
And
that's the difference between pomp and people who serve.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we see here that they wanted all that elaborate display of who they are. But yet, when it comes down to it, they're nothing. They're just like you and I. Very good point. So what was King Agrippa's assessment of the charges brought before Paul? Now, this is Festus talking in this particular case, and the answer is in the next chapter. So who would like to read 25 through 27 for us, please?
But I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death. Since he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided. Yet I have nothing definite about him to write to the others. Therefore, I have brought him before you, all especially the order, King Agrippa, so that after the investigation takes place, I may have something to write. For it seems first,
thank you, Linda. So, what was Festus saying about Paul?
That he was he didn't feel that.
Worthy of death, he was innocent, and he's asking Agrippa's input for something to write to the emperor. You know, what is he going to say? I'm sending you this guy to be tried because he asked to be in front of Caesar. I have nothing to write of charges against him. Ted.
Verse 19 gives us this idea that Festus absolutely lost
mm-hmm.
with what the charges that the Jews tried to say are worthy of death. I mean, he says, they simply had some points of disagreement about their own religion, about a dead man, Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have any understanding of all of the things that Jesus, all of the trouble, in quotes, for the Jews. And so he doesn't understand that. And so he's hoping that Agrippa, being Jew, will have some idea about what he can write to Caesar about. It's not guilty of anything in the Roman law.
And right, and under the Jewish law, he's guilty of nothing also. Exactly. In fact, when you look at Agrippa's response, we look at chapter 26, verses 30 and 32. The king stood up, and the governor, and Bernice, and those who were sitting with him. And when they had gone aside, they began talking to one another, saying, this man is not doing anything worthy of death or imprisonment. This is Agrippa's assessment And Agrippa says, said to Festus, this man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. So that was set in stone for Paul to go to Rome. And the last question I like you to think about is, how does Paul's life encourage you with your spiritual journey? What can we learn during all this time about Paul and what he'd done that would reinforce our spiritual journey? We'd like to take a stab at that. Carol?
He was always ready to give a defense, in this case, as to charges that were brought against him. But for us as Christians, quite often people are either asking because of positive things or because of negative things to put you on the spot because of your Christianity. So we need to be encouraged to always have an answer.
Sure, exactly. Ted?
Paul is in such a unique position being a Roman in the Jewish sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the Paul harkens back, brings me back to his statement that I am everything to everyone. And so we need to understand that we need to be willing to change our approach and our focus when we're confronting different people with the Spirit, because some people are not going to respond the same way as others. And so we need to be willing to change.
Exactly. And when you look at Paul's defense, he always spoke the truth. He endured faithfully. He prayed continually, something that we should be doing in all our lives. And finally, he trusted in the Lord.